Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 92. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and with David Todd off today, I am joined once again by Alex Kazor from SteelersDepot.com. Alex, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Dave. How was your weekend?
Fine. Absolutely not eventful. Just the way I like them. I watched a little bit of basketball, like I'm sure a lot of our listeners did. I'm not hugely into basketball, but I will pay attention to it this time of year. You know, in addition to obviously following free agency stuff and you know around the NFL and things of that matter. Alex, it's Monday, and I think a lot of Steelers fans woke up this morning and realized that the team had only signed one outside free agent so far. There are some angry people on Twitter this morning, and for starters, they seem to really be taking their frustration out on Ross Cockrell. Here's one tweet I got this morning from Clayton Schmidt. Saying that, hold on, just I'll get you the exact tweet here. I had to laugh when I read this one here. He says, "I don't care what facts you got or anything. Ross Cockrell is a terrible quarterback."
Who could argue with that?
Absolutely. I don't know why. Why do you think people all of a sudden are on thinking Ross Cockrell is the new William Gay?
Because they got tired of William Gay, and so you got to move on to somebody else. It's just, you know, how these things go. There's a narrative that gets built up. Gay had to deal with that early in his career. Ike Taylor had to deal with that early in his career. It just feels like a rite of passage almost for a Steelers cornerback.
And to be fair, I mean, Ross, nobody's saying Ross deserved to go to the Pro Bowl last year, right? But, and you know, there's definitely areas of his game that need improvement. You know, tackling, you know, he needs to be a more reliable tackler. He's not thought of as a top 10 cornerback in the league right now, but you could do worse, right?
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of improvement from Cockrell last year. I think he was the Steelers' best cover corner. Now, maybe that's not saying a whole lot because the competition wasn't the best. Gay's in a decline, though not as bad as people say, and Artie Burns was so up and down in his rookie year. But even as a tackler, I thought Cockrell got a lot better. I remember the Baltimore game. Everyone thinks about, you know, AB's immaculate extension, and obviously that was, you know, the play of the year. But I remember the one tackle he had in the open field after like a 10 or 15 yard gain, and if he doesn't make that tackle, that thing's going probably to the house. And Cockrell had messed up his shoulder really good a couple plays before, and you could really tell he was fighting through it. And for him to make an open field tackle like that with a bum shoulder, you know, I think showed a lot of heart, and he made the play. So I think he improved a lot. I'm not opposed to adding competition. The Steelers likely will during the draft, but he was the best cover corner last year. I don't think there's a debate about that.
What did you think about the Steelers deciding to bring in Devon House to use their fax machine?
it's like you're the girlfriend that just wants the free dinner, right? and not a serious relationship. Of course they're going to want some competition because the depth is just zero. I've talked about that. The Steelers cornerback depth is the weakest probably part on this roster right now, right there with the edge depth as well, because there's no depth on the outside of corner and there's no depth in the slot at cornerback. And that's why, you know, I was really hoping the Steelers could make a splash at slot corner this year, why I was most bummed out about missing out on Logan Ryan. I didn't really care about missing out on Hightower or House or really, you know, anyone else, but really thought Logan Ryan could come in and solve a lot of problems. So they have to add depth. That was a given, and you know, it's been disappointing that they haven't been able to do that a little bit, and now they're going to go into the draft with big depth questions at outside corner and slot corner.
Do you expect them to sign one of these bottom of the barrel guys here before the draft?
Yeah, I think they have to. It's probably going to be a Brandon Flowers. I mean, they got to bring in somebody just to give him another guy in the mix, because otherwise you really feel compelled to draft, you know, two cornerbacks, one who can play outside, one who can play inside, to really kind of solidify your depth, unless you're really comfortable with Golson. But Colbert's basically said that they're not, and how can you be? So I think they bring in somebody just to give some veteran presence and give them just some sort of fallback option, so they're not relying on rookies all the way around.
I don't think, David, myself, and probably even you. I mean, we didn't. It sounds like you expected maybe a little bigger splash than what we have so far in Justin Hunter. But with that said, I mean, you're probably not shocked either the way it's gone. You know, as we sit here now, what is it, the 20th of March? I kind of thought we'd have two or three small fish bagged by now. You know, I'm a little surprised that, you know, we're just talking about Justin Hunter. But with that said, I didn't expect him to go out and you know, compete. I if anything shocked me, it was the fact that they brought Hightower in and talked to him as long as they did. So, you know, overall thoughts, you know, is this just a case of them, you know, strategically looking at guys and just not willing to pay what other teams are willing to pay?
I think that they did want to make a splash, and I think it made a lot of sense, because obviously the window with Ben is closing. We can get into his comments. That's kind of been, I guess, the biggest story since our last podcast. And the Steelers had a lot of cap space, and they still do. And you estimated right now, I think, about, 10.9 in actual free cap space when you take out all the stuff that you're going to have to pay here soon. So I thought they would make a splash, and they've done it before with Mitchell or Darius Green, so it's not uncommon for Kevin Colbert. And I think they tried to do that. It just, you know, prices just never could match up. It is tough to justify, you know, bringing in a guy like a Drake Kirkpatrick or a Logan Ryan or a Dont'a Hightower and basically be your highest paid player on defense. There's a dynamic there that you have to worry about when you bring in a free agent to make him kind of the face of that defense financially, and you don't want to upset the apple cart that way, and you got to make sure it's the right guy with the right work ethic, you know, to surpass a guy like Cam Hayward. I think it was Joe Banner, who's on Twitter now, who was talking about that, saying, you know, you always have to be careful when you make that splash free agency move to make sure he meshes with the locker room well. Otherwise, guys are going to talk and maybe get frustrated about bringing in the highest paid guy who isn't maybe the quintessential, you know, guy off the field in the locker room and things like that. So a lot of the dynamics to consider. And so I'm not mad that they didn't pay $10 million for Kirkpatrick or Ryan. I get it, but I just thought there would be a splash somewhere.
Do you think they should have paid $11 million for Hightower?
No, not a chance. I am not bummed out about missing on Hightower at all. I was really only bummed out about missing out on Logan Ryan. I mean, Hightower is the better player than Vince Williams. Don't get it confused what I'm trying to say here, but I think the difference is not great enough to justify that kind of price tag, that kind of investment for you have Vince Williams dirt cheap, who's going to generally do the same things as Hightower. Hightower is a better pass rusher. You can do some more stuff with him. I'll grant you that, but against the run, I think they're going to be similar in coverage. They're going to have similar deficiencies. Hightower may be a tick better, but again, it's just not worth that kind of money. And plus, Hightower's never stayed healthy. He's never played a 16-game in his career, so no thanks.
Yeah, I thought it was funny now, since Hightower signed, you get the Jets, the report about the Jets kind of balking about that. You know, they offered him all this money, and then kind of, you know, to read the story, pulled the offer after his physical. The Steelers obviously were in this thing right up in until the end, but I find it hard to imagine that the Steelers offered more than $8 million a season, and Lord knows that they weren't going to put any incentives in there that he ultimately got from the New England Patriots. I'm not bummed that they missed out on Hightower. I could have stomached the fact that they had signed him for $7.5 to $8 million, because, you know, it sounds like the Steelers were willing to spend, you know, what, $5-6 million on Lawrence Timmons possibly. Now, he obviously got a lot more guaranteed money and something that he wasn't going to get from the Steelers there. So, Well, you know, here we are, March 20th, and Justin Hunter is the only outside free agent signed. I've said all along I expect another corner, or I expect a corner to be signed. It's not going to get anybody excited. And look, I still think there's a shot you might see maybe a Zach Brown or a Gerald Hodges, although right now at this moment, Zach Brown's probably one of the top-rated remaining free agents on the market right now. So, it'd be interesting to see. He's going to sign somewhere, I'm willing to bet, this week. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if the Steelers are one of those teams that maybe he visits with there. You talk about cap space there. The Steelers I have projected as in real time right now, having a little bit more than $19.5 million dollars in salary cap space. If you want to look out, project into the future, you know, with some of these other future costs and you know, everything associated with it, almost $11 million in real cap space. As I mentioned several times, keep in mind that Le'Veon Bell, new deal for him, will probably result in his cap hit going down. But I tell you right now, the way it's looking, Alex, I don't know about you, if the Steelers go on the rest of this offseason and let's say that Tuitt and Villanueva end up eating up, let's say, roughly $8 million in available salary cap space with extensions for them. Even if that happens, I think when you get to the point with doing a deal with Le'Veon Bell, and especially if you're not going to spend any big money in free agency moving forward, which, let's face it, what's left to spend big
right.
To spend big money on. I would like to see the Steelers give Le'Veon Bell as much of his 2017 money as they can in a base salary as opposed to a signing bonus, you know. And I think, it might result in maybe Le'Veon Bell's cap hit only coming down, let's say, $4 million, $3 million. But I think it's worth it to pay his 2017 money as much of it as you can. And remember, Joel Corey thinks it's going to be around $17 million in first-year money for Le'Veon Bell. Pay that base salary, man, and limit your liability with dead money, you know, as far as amortized money goes. So, you know, that just a quick thought there on the Steelers salary cap situation. Haven't gotten your thoughts. I know you've written about it. You did a great job almost immediately having something up on Justin Hunter after the Steelers signed him. Recap the pros and cons with him.
I think you said it well, Dave. Basically, right after Hunter was signed, he said he's an insurance policy against Martavis Bryant and Sammy Coates. I expect Bryant to be reinstated, but you just don't know at this point. I'm less worried about Bryant failing a drug test from now to like the start of training camp than I am about, you know, will Goodell actually let him back in or let him in a timely fashion that gives the Steelers some sort of notice going into the draft. Goodell's supposed to respond to Bryant's reinstatement request by March 28th, but we've seen in the past with Alden Smith and others, he doesn't always he's not always punctual about that. So he's still got to meet with Bryant. To our knowledge, that has not happened yet. So we don't know what that situation is going to be. Sammy Coates, I have confidence in Sammy Coates, but I can't say that I have, you know, I'm completely confident. Provided his fingers heal up fine and everything's okay, I think he's going to do well. People forget how well he did the first 5 weeks of the year, but you can't guarantee it, of course. So Hunter is going to be just that dynamic, vertical threat, feast or famine guy. He's been so inconsistent in his career. His time in Buffalo last year really summed it up. 10 catches, 4 touchdowns. He's a guy that you know has caught the long ball, isn't really much of a yak guy, but he's a build-up speed type guy. Who can win some 50-50 balls, is able to locate the football and high point it with the height that he has, 6'4". He ran a 4.4 coming out of college with like a 38.5-inch vertical. He's going to be that explosive guy. And actually, I didn't think his hands were that bad. I think there was a kind of things going on Twitter that his hands were bad and he was dropping passes. I didn't really see that. So he's played on the outside. He's played in the slot even, which surprised me some. I didn't know that about Justin Hunter. He has played inside, so that could be interesting for some matchup problems. But you know, it's weird though, because for most free agents under COVID, you can guarantee they're going to make the roster, but for Hunter, I think it's kind of 50-50.
If you had to bet right now, whether or not he makes the roster, Does he?
Yeah, I was asked about that on my Ask Alex last week, and I put Hunter on there as the sixth wide receiver just because he's going to make some plays in camp because he's going to look good in shorts because he's a height, weight, speed guy. I think he's going to look pretty good. And, yeah, I just thought there's more of an allure to it than Kobe Hamilton, who I don't want to knock because, you know, he did good things last year, and DeMarcus Ayers. And because Hunter can play in the slot a little bit as well, I think gives him some extra value that can get him a guy over like DeMarcus Ayers.
Third down, Kobe.
Yeah, that's what he was good for one catch a game. But Hunter's going to give you that dynamic spark that this offense demands. And obviously, a lot's going to depend on Bryant, Coates situations. If one of them isn't in the picture for whatever reason, if Coates has a bad camp, if Bryant isn't getting reinstated, then that obviously changes things entirely. But I think Hunter's got that explosive trait. And if you can search up the scouting report I did last week on Hunter.
Yeah, and look, we still don't know the details of this contract yet because it still has not crossed the NFL wire. And because
it's a one-year deal, right?
It's a one-year deal, and it's going to be a one-year deal, probably a minimum salary benefit deal, you know, on top of it. We just don't have the official details because it has not crossed the wire yet, and it has not been filed with the NFLPA. And as soon as that happens, which now looks like it's going to come across the wire Monday afternoon, that means we could probably look for the details of it to surface on the NFLPA on Tuesday. But regardless, it's a no lose signing, right?
Right. Yeah. There's no risk at all with it. You cut him. That's fine. He goes the way Kevin Barlow, whatever. He becomes a trivia question for us a couple years from now. But he's your dynamic guy, and this offense demands somebody that can stretch the field, create big plays. And that's what Hunter's done. Obviously, there's a little bit of familiarity with his coaching staff. I think it was Mike Munchak that drafted him. He's caught passes from Zach Mettenberger. He has actually kind of a decent amount of success with Mettenberger in his career in Tennessee. So, you know, you kind of get some inside information on who the guy is. You know, if he makes this roster, that's a win. If he makes a couple of big plays for you, that's perfect for me. I'm not expecting to revive his career, but if you can get what he's basically been his career, which was the occasional big play, then I'm happy.
What do you think this does to the draft at wide receiver?
I don't know if it changes it. I'm still, it might sound crazy, I'm still not opposed to drafting one late. Or if someone really jumps out at you early, I'm not opposed to that either. Hunter's not going to be the cure-all for that room. And just given the Steelers, again, it depends on Bryant. Who knows? Hopefully there's an answer before the draft. At the very least, Goodell owes that to the organization. I expect him to, but again, who knows? But with the track record of how good the Steelers are evaluating wide receivers, I'm fine with just drafting your strength, you know, bringing in more talent, letting them get coaching by Richard Mann for maybe this last year. You know, we keep saying Mann's going to retire. He still hasn't yet. You know, so I've always kind of been in the mindset of draft one late, sixth, seventh round and stash from the practice squad. But even early, you know, I don't completely rule it out.
You snaked my late round prospect in your latest mock draft, didn't you?
Who was that?
The guy I talked to.
Robert Davis.
Robert Davis. Did you finally get around to looking at some film on him?
I haven't. I've seen some clips on Twitter, but he's just a height, weight, speed guy that just like fits the Steelers to a T.
He really does, and that's, you know, I got to I don't know what provoked me. I came across a list of these really height, weight, speed type of guys. It was stemming from the combine that he had, you know, and I pulled up. I was able to track down, I think, three of the Georgia State games and sat there and watched them, and impressive player. I mean, his tape matches his combine numbers, and really that shouldn't be the way that you evaluate players, but we had the combine numbers first with him, you know, so, going back and watching him, but yeah, he's a fifth, sixth round guy that I'm with you. Here's the thing. Todd Haley was at Penn State Pro Day. We discussed that recently. But Chris Godwin, he's a top four round wide receiver, right?
Higher than that, probably maybe even late second.
I mean, how surprised would you be to see the Steelers draft a wide receiver in the second round?
Well, you'd have to tell me what happened to Martavis Bryant. Is this working under the assumption Bryant's reinstated before the draft or not?
Right. All, yeah. I mean, even though it's there's not, even though we don't have a lot of reason to believe Bryant will be able to stay clean, I still expect him to be reinstated. There's no, Bryant's not acting as if, anything other than that's going to happen. The league's not letting on like anything other than that's going to happen. So yeah, I mean, now past him being reinstated, I'm not going to bet anything on that. And I don't think the Steelers should either, because this guy is just one slip away from being gone again. So I mean, I think it's foolish to think for the Steelers to sit here and think we're going to have Martavis Bryant all season and the rest of his rookie contract. You really have to go almost week by week with that. So I mean, with all that said, though, I think that's part of the reason they went out and got a guy like Justin Hunter. I still hope they don't draft a wide receiver that early.
No, I get the reservations, and my guess is that they just can't afford it. If they were more active in free agency and they had signed, able to make a splash, let's say Logan Ryan, then that probably going to give you more freedom for what could be considered a luxury pick. But because they haven't, and because you have edge, you have both cornerback spots, everything else you have to address, running back, they probably won't. But nothing shocks me with a draft. People always ask, and it's a fair question. It's fine to throw it out there, but could the Steelers draft X position in X round? And I almost always say yes, because you have to have that open mind going into the draft. You can't sit, and there's very few times where I'm like, no, definitely there's no scenario I can see where this is going to happen, because everything's on the table. It's about talent. It depends on how the board falls. Depends on who you drafted. I mean, there's so many variables involved. It's really hard for me to say no, they definitely won't draft a receiver in the second or third round. They could. I mean, I've compared it to improv before. It's like yes and. You always accept it, and you try to figure out exactly how it works and move on to the next piece. It's unlikely, but I don't think it's impossible.
True or false, the Steelers will draft a wide receiver this year.
I say true. I say somewhere in the late rounds. It's what they do best. They have no more. The most success they have in a position in the draft is wide receiver, bar none. I think it's stupid not to keep drafting, keep investing. Someone that can go in the practice squad. That's a perfect, Robert Davis is a perfect guy, developmental guy who definitely needs a year. I'm all for it. Jamari Staples, another name. I like Chad Williams from Grambling State, a couple names out there late rounds.
I agree with you, and really, you go back to saying, will the Steelers draft this position, that position in any round? The only position they're not going to draft, at least in the first five or six or five rounds, is offensive line. I think I'd be absolutely foolish to go that position, and really, all these people clamoring for a defensive lineman, I don't see it that early either, and I've said that all along.
Yeah, probably not that early, but they could take one. I mean, I don't, again, I, it's another position I don't discount. If they want to take a Carlos Watkins or Nasir Jones or somebody like that, kind of in the mid rounds, to someone that can be that better pass rusher. Because LT Walton's never going to be much of a pass rusher. He's going to be strong against the run. So if you can find even more of a three tech type, who can come in a nickel and just kind of a nickel only guy to get after the quarterback, I think it makes some sense. And I think they've shown interest in Carlos Watkins, so that's one name to keep in mind.
Hey, Steeler fans, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger, who, by the way, was at had a speaking engagement this past weekend that we're about to cover here in just a little bit. Let Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in, let's see, West Virginia. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig. Just so, email Craig, say hello. Talk about, ask him what the mortgage rates are doing right now. Craig at blackandgoldlending.com, or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com as well. First Advantage Mortgage, company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. What did you think about Roethlisberger at that speaking engagement this past week, given some of his, testimony? Let's see, what else did he have to say? He's leaning towards playing in 2017. I believe he said his weight was what, 240 to what, 250 to 260? What was it?
He said about 255 to 260. So, big boy, big man.
That caused everybody. That, you know, I posted that. When did I post that? Saturday morning, was it? Bright and early Saturday morning. That thread took a. That thread in the comments just. Yeah. It really went off.
Yeah. First of all, good eye and way to get the interview. I think one Steeler fan had captured the whole interview, and you were able to post it in the thread on Steelers Depot. A couple things. One is, people have to – first of all, it was a great interview. I mean, I rarely see Ben ever get that candid and that extensive and to talk about his life, really hasn't happened. There's not really been a whole lot of sit-downs and feature stuff. He'll do his radio show stuff, and, you actually learn a good bit of football from there. He's kind of honest about that, but about his life and stuff, you don't really hear a whole lot about it. To the "I'm leaning towards playing" comment, that made a lot of people unhappy. I tweeted this out. The context is super important here. This was at the end of the interview, and Ben had just been done talking about his boys and his wife. He got very emotional, choked up. I mean, the guy could barely, and then I think just tried to lighten the mood. The interviewer was kind of just like, "Hey, you coming back next year? Wish we could have beat the Pats, this year. I thought we had this year." And Ben could barely get the words out. So, yeah, I don't know if you really should. It's not like he had a serious face and had thought about it and said it, like a regular question. I mean, the guy was super emotional, basically crying, and he's thinking about his family and stuff like that. And obviously, if he were to retire, it'd be because of his family to spend time with them. So you can understand why he's not really giving the most definitive answer in that moment. So I think people don't realize the context of that, which is really, really important. And I just thought the whole interview was great. So I think the focus shouldn't be on just his weight comment or the retirement comment. It's a really candid interview. They talked about a lot of stuff. They talked about his motorcycle accident, which I don't think Ben has talked about in years, basically not since right after things happened. They talked about his upbringing, his high school life, his college life, playing in the NFL, some cool stories there. It's a really good interview. It's really candid. And I think people should talk about just that and its whole are the one or two kind of comments that are taken out of context.
That article, that post obviously got a lot of clicks, a lot of traffic. Do you think I could have got more if I would have written the title "Overweight Roethlisberger Still Considering Retirement"?
I think you would have broke the internet, Dave, if you had done that.
It's still early in the off season. Ben obviously hasn't started his training right now. He looked a little thick up there, I'll admit. Do I expect Ben to retire? No, I don't think anybody does. I mean, why? It's not a surprise that Ben hasn't fully committed to come out and said, "I'm playing" yet. And, even though I think he should go ahead and get that behind him right now, he hasn't. To me, it's no big deal. Right now, anyway, and as far as weight, let's see what he shows up at, training camp at, probably going to be around, 240, 250, 245, 250, right around in there. So, needless to say, the comments really went off the rail on that post there. What else we got to talk about? Sean Spence, a guy that I thought, the further he remained unsigned, I thought, maybe this is a guy you bring back in on a one-year veteran minimum contract. You can never have too many guys that know what's going on competing for a roster spot. Well, he's off the market. Sean Spence signed a fairly decent deal. I think roughly 1 year, $3 million with the Indianapolis Colts. Now that contract, of course, includes some incentives for Sean Spence to hit, but you know, and overall, a nice contract for him right now. Do you? I mean, you've heard us talk about Hodges and Zach Brown. I mean, they're gonna bring somebody else in before going into the draft, right? I mean, you cannot go into the draft with Shazier, Vince Williams, Matakevich, and Steven Johnson, right?
I don't know. I mean, they haven't shown interest in anybody else besides Hightower, and I think Hightower was just because he was the last big free agent out there, you know, the only guy that was really kind of a difference maker and a playmaker, and he gave a lot of pass rush ability off the edge as well. I mean, it's not like cornerback where they've had interest and they brought in several guys, and it's very clear that they're trying to make an effort to upgrade the position. With inside linebacker, I feel like they were looking at just one guy, and people said, you know, that doesn't inspire confidence in Vince Williams, but the fact that they haven't shown any interest in anybody else besides the cream of the crop at the position says, I think, they have confidence in Vince Williams, and they don't want to go with another middle-tier option because Williams is going to be their guy. And so unless they brought somebody in that would clearly be the starter over Williams, they're not going to bring in anybody at all. Who's left out there? There's really nobody. And so they have not shown any interest. It's not impossible that they bring in an inside linebacker, but I think they end up drafting one instead of bringing in a free agent.
It sure would be nice if Reddick was floating around there, right? I mean,
those odds are looking mighty slim, though.
Yeah, I mean, I could see this team going Reddick, and I've already posted this. I what was my first mock draft? Do you remember? What?
I don't.
Didn't I go? Hold on, just a minute here. In fact, I got to start getting this other one, the second one, written up right now. As well, I'm trying to see.
I mean, I think if Reddick's there, then yeah, he's the guy. But I mean, I know we always say this, but I really don't think there's any chance that Reddick falls that far.
Yeah, never say never, though, right?
I'm not saying never, but because he's a fit in basically any system, he can play 4-3 off ball, can be a 3-4 inside guy, 3-4 edge guy. He's going to be in the equation for every single team, and at one point, that athleticism and playmaking ability is going to be too much. So it's not like he's a guy that fits in only one specific type of system. Let's like a Bud Dupree was a 3-4 rush backer. That's it. That already eliminates a lot of teams from a scheme standpoint, from a need standpoint, and that's what kind of let him fall to Pittsburgh. Reddick's a different story.
I think if Reddick doesn't make it to the Steelers, I think there's a chance he's within a few picks, right? I mean, or are you sold that he's going to be a top 20 guy and thus 10 picks away?
No, I mean, I think maybe his floor could be Dallas at like 28 or something. I mean, he could be a couple picks away if there's a little bit of a slide, but I think he's got a really good chance to be a top 25 guy.
Let's see, my first mock draft, pulling it back up now, Carl Lawson and Derek Rivers in the first two rounds. I think it'd be I understand the Derek Rivers small school thing and all like that. And look, I understand him being left out of the first rounds of several mock drafts. Carl Lawson as well. I mean, I get it, especially when it comes to Lawson and maybe some concerns about play against the run. But regardless, both these guys are top 40 guys, right?
Yeah, I consider them both to be first round talent. You know, the edge is weird though because somebody's gonna fall. I mean, they can't all go in the first round. You know, even if they're first round talent. Or for, you know, first round viable. So I just don't know who it's going to be. I mean, maybe Rivers, but how far was that fall? I don't know. The biggest thing I struggle with edge guys in my mock is, you know, if I would not take one in the first round, if I went some other position, some other route, let's say Kevin King or Melvin Fonwu in the first round, what edge guy could I realistically get in the second round? And I really struggle trying to come up with a name. Could Rivers fall that far? I just don't feel it. Neither with Tyus Bowser. So then I'm kind of looking at maybe a Tim Williams or a Ryan Anderson, and so it's tough for me to really fall for those guys. So second round edge is just kind of an area I really struggle with.
What is, you know, we see guys like Tack McKinley and of course the kid out of Tennessee considered slam dunk, you know, first round guys. And what is it that people are, is it play against the run when it comes to guys like Rivers and Lawson? Is that the thing that's got people having these guys out of, really few guys haven't fallen out of their top 50.
No, I don't think Rivers is really good against the run. Lawson, I guess you can make an argument for that, but I really think Rivers sets a really physical edge, and his hand usage, his technique, and his punch is really good for where he's at. I think it's probably just competition concerns. It's really just the biggest thing with Rivers, kind of the obvious. I just don't know who's a lock. I don't even think McKinley's a slam dunk for the first round coming off that injury. If he didn't have the surgery to fix the torn labrum, then yeah, he's probably going to go in the first round. But I think really Barnett feels like the only guy I'm confident in, because Charles Harris could slide after a bad combine. You know, people might be turned off on Lawson's medical. Rivers has a small school concern. So the edge group, it's deep, but it's really unpredictable too.
Yeah, I'm with you about Tack. I wouldn't be surprised if he fell out of the first round. He's one of those guys. I find myself going back and trying to. And remember, I cut up every one of his sacks. I watched a lot of film along the way of him. He's one of those guys that I just am not. I'm not seeing that first round. Don't get me wrong. When you talk about draft prospects, you got to talk about how they win. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their spot in this draft for the most part. I mean, obviously not everybody's going to get drafted. But every player has their win capable, moments. I just don't see he's enough of a winning guy to warrant first round pick. Second round, different story, especially, fall. I think he's a lot better value if you get him in the second round.
Yeah, I'm not even crazy about McKinley's tape when he was healthy. I think bend is kind of the big thing with him. So I really wasn't crazy about the pick before the injury. And then after the injury, knowing you might not get year one value or an impact, and maybe not until the second half of year one, I'm just not crazy about it in a really deep edge class with a lot of guys that I think can help right away. Because, again, you just can't have James Harrison playing 100% of the snaps for the first 8 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's the thing is they're going to have to rely on. I found it interesting the comments that Mike Tomlin supposedly had with Carl Lawson, talking about his drop ability and all like that. Mike Tomlin, so many words, just said, "Look, you just need you to get after the passer." And I think with any guy that they draft this time around, I mean, obviously there's the adjustment period. That even guys that are used to standing up in college go through. I mean, Bud Dupree, perfect example of that. There's adjustment period for these guys regardless. So why not get them doing something right out of the chute that they're used to doing, and that's pinning their ears back and getting after the quarterback. So I think that's what makes it. Something to look forward to when it comes to whoever the Steelers draft this year. Yes, James Harris is going to be out there, and yes, they should try in the first eight weeks of the season to run James Harrison's wheels off of him as best they can, because they're going to need him. Another year older, you have your doubts whether or not James can make it through another season. Obviously, he's not going to be able to play 1,000 snaps, I don't think. So you're going to have one of these young draft picks be able to step up. And quite honestly, I still think the best person to do that is Carl Lawson.
Yeah, I think they really like. Do you get the feeling that they really like Carl Lawson? Because I don't know, maybe it's a gut thing, maybe it's stupid, but I think they really like Carl Lawson.
Yeah. No, you're talking to the same guy that thought they really liked Andrew Billings last year as well, too. But, I really do, and I think they're confident they could get in there. Now, will they overdraft him by, I don't know. That's why it's so hard now, and I have you guys, when you write up your profiles now, to put a round, a prediction. The prediction shouldn't actually be, in fact, we should stop calling them predictions. We should probably start calling them what? Round generalities. Around grades, because to try to pick where a player is going to go within 31 other picks especially when you get past round one, is damn near tough to do. I mean, because you fall out, if you miss by two picks and a 32nd pick in the second round, well, then you're in the third round. People say, well, you said he's going to be picked in the second round. So I guess what I'm getting at with Carl Lawson is I understand people saying he's not a first-round pick. Okay, I get that. Well, if that's true, is he a second-round pick, and how high of a second-round pick is he? Because we're talking about a 12 slot span maybe, and if he's if he fits a need, if you like his character, if his medical's checked out at that point, and he's your best edge on the board, that I think you got to take Carl Lawson there, 30th overall.
Here's the thing about the draft that I'm always obviously learning more and more, and it's fun to go in the process and hear from people that have been in the NFL. And the thing is, no team has 32 guys with a first round grade. There's usually about 20, 25 guys for any team that's going to have a first round grade. So whoever the Steelers draft may not have a first round grade. They could still be a guy that they just evaluate differently than the rest of the league. Obviously, that could be a possibility, but it may not, because no team has 32 guys with a first round grade. So that's something to consider. So even if you view Lawson as a high second round pick and not quite a first rounder, whatever that means, whatever you're able to create the difference in, Lawson could still be your guy there, because you might not have another first rounder that fills a big position in need on your board. So it's just something to keep in mind. I thought that was an interesting nugget from Dan Hatman, who runs Scouting Academy, ex-NFL scout, saying that, yeah, you've never seen a team with more like 25 first-round grades in a particular class.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, I mean, we could be talking about a second-round talent regardless. Mm-hmm. You're running up to the podium if Reddick's there, right?
Probably. I mean, I have to just think about exactly how you're going to use him more. Again, you got to make sure you have that plan. I still like Lawson a good bit, but I think if Reddick does fall, I've gone back and forth. I mean, I like Lawson. I like Rivers. I think I'd entertain Lawson. In terms of edge, possible guys, Lawson, Rivers, Reddick are the three that I'd have to really kind of make a decision on at some point.
All right, your third mock draft's out. Obi is your guy, Mr. Planet Theory. I understand why you would go this way. I'll talk a little bit more about the UConn money backer, if you will.
Yeah, he's going to be the answer on defense. He's that guy that can be your dime defense player where the Steelers have been trying to find the last 2 years. They tried to use Robert Gould, and it just hasn't worked. So there's an interest there. He's the guy that can match up against tight ends, against some of these bigger receivers that can still play in the box against the run and be a physical presence there. He is your answer, no question about it. So I think there's still a good chance he's going to be there. I think, myself included, right after the combine, we slightly overvalue where he'd go as a top 20 guy. Probably not that high, but I think he's right there in play at pick number 30 for the Steelers. And if you feel like, because this edge class is deep, you can wait, then I think Mellon Farwell gives you a really good answer to a lot of problems you're going to have on defense with facing big tight ends, 10 personnel, spread five, wide sets and things like that. So big fan of Mellon Farwell's game, and I think he's a really good fit in Pittsburgh.
Is this a case of him getting hot during the combine and people finally now getting around to his tape to come back to reality that he might be an end of the round first guy, second round guy?
I think that the combine numbers even surprised me a little bit when you watch the tape. I didn't necessarily see that level of 4.4 speed and the 44-inch vertical, but safeties are really tough for me to watch on any TV tape, as they are for anybody. So, you don't always get the best feel for it. But Mellon Farwell has really good tape as well. That's the biggest thing with him. He's a guy that can play in the box. He can play the deep half. He was a playmaker. That's why I like him over, let's say, Jabril Peppers. He's bigger. He's longer. He's just as fast. He was able to be a playmaker and make some really kind of impact plays in the secondary or just in general, which Peppers did not do. So I think that everything checks out with him. But you're right. It's UConn. It's like Byron Jones. No one really knew who Byron Jones was in the media community until he tore up the combine. So it's a similar situation.
This happened before the alleged incident with the police or incident with the girlfriend or whatnot that landed him in some trouble. Jordan Lewis, cornerback out of Michigan, you have going in round two to the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about Lewis a lot before as a guy that can play inside or out. But, yeah, obviously the big thing is he was charged with, you know, basically domestic violence. And I don't know what the situation is. I'm not trying to pass judgment on guilt or not. I'm kind of going to let that situation play out. You just hope that you get some sort of answer before the draft begins because that's obviously a very serious situation.
Yeah, and you've broken him down, you know, already, and we've talked enough about him. Already we know what he is. You would think teams have investigators on this right away. It'd be interesting to see if the Steelers bring in Jordan Lewis in for a pre-draft visit here in the coming weeks as well too. Round three, Terrell Basham, who you broke down, I believe already as well too, out of Ohio, an edge guy.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of strange for me to wait to the third for an edge, but, you know, my thought process was whatever edge I draft, it's going to be able to get on the field right away, provided they aren't injured or some sort of developmental prospect. So if I draft, you know, Melon Fonwu in the first round, you know, that's maximizing my ability to get guys on the field in year one because, again, the mentality is get guys on the field right away. We're in a win-now mode as the Roethlisberger window closes. So if I got edge in the first, you know, round three guy, depending on how the board goes, might not get on the field right away. But if I reverse it and I get first round guy who I know I can get on the field right away, which is a requirement, then I can go round two or round three for an edge guy who I already know is going to get a lot of playing time. So that was kind of my thought process there. And I really like Basham as a prospect, kind of Woodley-like, a speed of power guy, not going to really bend the edge too much, but really physical against the run, heavy hands, a great punch, big guy, 6'4", 270, kind of fits what the Steelers look for.
I'm going to need somebody to hold me if we wait until the third round to get an edge.
but doesn't that make sense to wait? Because it is a deep class. It's going to play right away.
It is. I would like to see them not have to wait that long. The second, third round pick, you have a guy that we're both familiar with, Gerald Everett, out tight end out of South Alabama. I think third round is where Everett deserves to go. How long he lasts, anybody's guess. I've warmed up to him more after going back and look, you know, there's no mistake. I'm old school when it comes to tight ends. I like my
You're the
tight,
George Kittle man.
Yeah, I like my tight ends to block a lot, and you know, that's why it was a little bit of a surprise to me when the Steelers signed Ladarius Green. But look, Ladarius Green has lived up. You know, it's only six games, but he is as was advertised. I mean, more of a receiving threat than he is a blocking threat. We knew that going in. Now, if only Ladarius Green can stay healthy, that would be a huge plus. Gerald Everett is along those same lines as Ladarius Green, as you rightly pointed out in your mock draft. I do hope, and I've said for quite a while, I do hope the Steelers draft a tight end at some point. You know, during this draft, because I am concerned about Ladarius Green.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, you can't trust Ladarius Green. It doesn't mean that he's going to retire. It doesn't mean he can't be productive. It doesn't mean he can't even stay healthy for all of 2017. He could, but you just can't trust him to do that. So I think a tight end's imperative. Everett's a Green clone, a little bit shorter, kind of a big receiver type, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Jordan Leggett. Steelers have shown us some interest in as well, who's a little bigger, better blocker, though he's not great at it either, but he did it at college and never did. So Leggett's a guy that's kind of right in the mix as well.
Samaje Perine out of Oklahoma in round four. It's not hard to kind of connect the dots there. I mean, look, you look at his play, you look at his tape, you look at the fact that the Steelers running backs coach James Saxon was at the Oklahoma Pro Day. The Steelers obviously, everybody believes, are going to draft a running back within the first four rounds. Where else does Samaje win?
He's just a big guy, and I didn't do the scouting report on him. I forget who did, Daniel or somebody, I think, did, but you can check that out on Steelers Depot. You know, the Steelers like their backs big, and he's 5'10 and a half, 233 pounds, I think, with some decent feet. Obviously, had a really productive career at Oklahoma, even though he shared time, at times with Joe Mixon. But I think he just fits what the Steelers look for. This has to be a better receiver, or at least more experience. I think he had no more than 15 catches in any single season with the Sooners. But the Steelers like their backs to be big, and I don't think they come much bigger than 233.
Round five, you got another edge guy, a guy I have not watched yet, Carroll Phillips.
Yeah, I really haven't gotten in his actual tape, but I saw him down there at the Senior Bowl, so I have a decent idea of Carroll Phillips. You know, he's going to be the speed guy. Basham's the power guy, took him in the third. You know, Phillips is going to be the speed guy. A project. You do worry about some of the football IQ stuff, you know, having to go through at the Senior Bowl, guys were having to tell them where to line up and kind of repeat things twice, and coaches never like to have to do that. But 1 year production, it was a good one. 19 tackles for a loss, 9 sacks last year for Illinois. I think a nice developmental prospect and a good kind of different mold than Terrell Basham.
Are you gonna be? Is it? Are you? Is he the one? Are you gonna be breaking him down on the site?
Oh, I'm sure at some point in the next few weeks I will.
I look forward to that. Round six, a guy we talked about at the top of the show, a guy, I like. This is my George Kittle of the wide receiver class. I think Robert Davis is one of those late round guys that can that has a lot of upside to him, and there's not a lot of film out there on Georgia State, so you got to be creative in searching for that on YouTube. But it is there. You have to watch some full games in order to in order to watch him. But when is the Georgia State Pro Day? Has that happened yet? Did that happen at the Georgia one that just recently concluded? Do you know?
I don't think they were together. You'd have to look it up. I've read so much stuff on Pro Days, I can't remember for sure. But Davis, again, who we talked about, is just that, you know, height, weight, speed, leaper guy, 41-inch vertical, 4.4 at 6'2.5", 219. Big playmaker, that vertical dynamic threat. I think if you have to stash him on the practice squad for a year, which actually is probably likely for a sixth-round pick and a receiver in this group, I'm totally fine with. You know, again, just draft and develop. That's what Steelers do at receiver better than any other position. I know I love to keep investing. If you keep winning the lottery by some chance, keep scratching off those tickets. You know, it'd be foolish not to.
You can't win if you don't play, right?
Exactly.
Well, the Georgia State Pro Day evidently was March the 7th. It was one of the first ones right
Oh, wow.
out of the chute. So I'm gonna have to go back and see what the reports are.
I think he stood on his numbers. If I remember Tony Pauline stuff, I think he didn't do anything. But hey, why would you if you run a 4.44?
Oh yeah,
21 inch
yeah.
Vert, just do your routes and call it a day.
Yeah, I'm more interested in maybe see who was there. More than anything, you know. But I mean, look, we can talk about who shows up to what pro days, but I mean, the pre-draft visits really mean a lot when it comes to the Steelers and draft picks. All right, closing out your mock, Jimmy Gilbert, another guy I've yet to watch tape on, inside linebacker out of Colorado.
Yeah, I didn't know much about Gilbert until his pro day, when he had a really good pro day, 6'3", 234. He ran a 4.64, jumped 37 inches, 10 feet in the broad. He was an edge guy at Colorado, so I'm kind of kicking him inside because I don't think he has the bend or any sort of pass rushing traits to really, you know, maintain a home on the edge. But I think he's an athletic guy who spent a lot of time in coverage at Colorado, you know, advanced in that way, like a Tyus Bowser, but obviously with late round value. He's just a good athlete, so it is kind of a good change up to Medicevich and Williams, who are more thumpers and less guys you think about athleticism with. Gilbert's kind of a different mold than that, so I like Jimmy Gilbert.
Today on the site, you broke down DeMonte Kizzee, cornerback out of San Diego State. How does he win, and what does he need to improve at?
Yeah, I really like Kizzee. You know, he's small, but he's scrappy as heck, and I think he compares very well with Tavon Young, who was 5'9", a buck 80 at a Temple, who most people thought would have to move for the slot, but played on the outside with Baltimore this year and played it very well. And Kizzee, I think, could play on the outside for a team in a situation like Pittsburgh. I think he moves to the slot, but you know, Kizzee was a right corner his entire career with the Aztecs. He's super physical against the run. I think he's the best corner against the run in this entire class, and he's 5'10", a buck 84. He's got great ball skills, 15 receptions the last 2 years. The San Diego State all-time leader in career interceptions. I think he has 17. So he's got the physicality against the run. He's got the football IQ. He's got the ball skills. He checks every box. And so, you know, with Jordan Lewis, the situation very, you know, unknown right now. Casey's a guy that I really like, who I could kick inside to the slot and be very happy with.
What were some of the things or prerequisites to be a Steelers cornerback as far as measurables?
You know, I'm working on that right now. I'm kind of letting pro days kind of finish out. I don't know if you've seen all the drafts I have going about getting that ready for this year. I can try to pull it up here real quick if I have it. I forget what the numbers are. I think you gotta have.
But he's close, right?
I mean, I haven't put most of these guys through kind of the litmus test yet. I don't even have it in my drafts right now.
I know you're doing something maybe with outside linebackers as well too, right? With
edge, I'm gonna do it all again with all the positions that I can. I have right now in the hopper outside linebackers, defensive line, receivers. I'll have cornerbacks in there as well. I'm just waiting for guys to go through their pro days to maybe get some new numbers on verticals and things like that. Before I do that, but that's something I'm really looking forward to, because it's kind of fun to see how it shakes up, and we'll see if Casey fits.
The 4-round mock draft that Chad Reuter of NFL.com, he's put out some I thought some decent ones. I mean, it's hard to do these things multi-round for all 32 teams. You know, when you don't focus on one, you're usually not very good at all of them when it comes to that. But in the past, he's done fairly well. I wasn't a big fan of his latest one that you posted on the site, I believe on, Sunday. You know, for starters, he has Tack McKinley, an injured guy, a guy that you and I aren't incredibly high on, first-round guy. He has him in the first round to the Steelers. In the second round, he has Baylor wide receiver KD Cannon. I got to be honest, I haven't watched a lot of tape on him so far, so I don't want to speak out of turn with him. A third round, though, Sidney Jones, who just recently suffered a torn Achilles. It's probably going to miss all of his rookie season, so that's two injured guys that are, you know, two guys dealing with surgeries that he has going to the Steelers with their third round comp pick. He has Chris Wormley going to the Steelers. And then finally, he has Kendall Beckwith, another guy dealing with an ACL injury, going to the Steelers. So if we were only allowed to draft players who had surgeries, this would be the draft, right?
Yeah, it's a mash unit. They're going to be limping their way in. I'm guessing that Chad Reuter didn't realize all that in totality and was just looking on the individual each time, because no one's drafting that kind of mashed unit, especially a team like the Steelers trying to win a Super Bowl. It's tough to do those kind of mock drafts. I wish they would give explanations, though, for this picks. You know, I always get mad when they don't, because I feel like anybody can just throw names out there, but at least have an explanation in there to give something for us.
Yeah, they throw darts worse than us bloggers do on some of these. I mean, they're fun to write about. Like I said, Chad normally does. Normally I come away all right, I think, with some of the mock drafts that he does. And just to be clear, I mean, do you like to use these mock draft simulators? I know I don't. I mean, people tend to, I think, want us to. Why is that?
I don't use them for my mock. I did it for that big off-season exercise that I did, but just because the way, if boards aren't updated or with the sim getting funny, you can have guys that drop that probably won't or shouldn't, so it gets weird. But they're fun to mess around with. I mean, I don't blame them for it. I mean, I'll go on there at night sometimes and just do a couple just for the fun of it.
All right, what else has caught your eye before we start wrapping things up?
I think that's about everything. I got a really fun report I'm doing tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you who it is. It's a pretty obscure name, but he's probably the most fun and interesting guy that I'm going to do a report on or even watch or know about this entire draft season. You have any draft guys that are players that are catching your eye or any reports coming up there, Dave?
I got a report for my accountant. My accountant and my puppy have been keeping me so damn busy with my wife out of town right now. So I'm going to try to continue to plow through some of these tight ends. Now I saw
you added one Adam Shaheen to the list. I'm sure you're excited about watching him.
Yeah, the thing is there's not a lot of tape on him. Mm-hmm. In fact, you have to go if you want to watch a lot of his 2016 tape. You have to go to the Ashland website and actually suffer through those games without any fast forward.
The games are on the website though. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, if you have to be, creative. I can't remember if they're actually on that website or if they're on the conference website of the two. I want to say they're on the Ashland website though, because I found a whole slew of them. And that's the thing is a lot of people are writing up reports about him that I think are going off of what, one 2015 game and then an all-star game. I mean, that's all that's visibly, I think, floating around out there tape-wise. Now, I think didn't Draft Breakdown add another game of his?
Yeah, they have two right now.
And one of them's a 2015 game, though, right?
I thought they were both 16, but I don't remember for sure.
I might be confused.
You might, and I shouldn't say this publicly, but you might want to just email Ashland and see if you can get tape from them, because I actually have old Ashland tape of Jamie Metter, the Browns defensive lineman. I contacted them a couple years ago, and they sent me Ashland tape, so maybe they'll be friendly again.
All right, well, why don't you send me that email address? Right. I see they do now have the Wayne State and Northwood game here. Of him, but see, as of two weeks ago, they only had one of his games up there, I think, so they've added another game since then. So it looks like it's gonna be a slow day for the Steelers. It doesn't sound like they have any free agent visitors coming in. We'll have to see what happens the rest of the week. Don't know yet. It doesn't sound, if nothing major happens, Alex, you'll probably be joining me again on Friday. And, we'll talk a little bit more draft stuff and everything, about player prospects that we've done. And perhaps by then I'll have a mock draft that we can shoot the hell out of as well. Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steelers fan, a Pittsburgh native, Craig is a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out terrible podcast listeners. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com, or you can apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Craig, thanks as always for being a supporter to this show. Alex, thank you for sitting in for David Todd today. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, please go to SteelersDepot.com and find that donate button upper right navigational bar. And we'll be back after on Friday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.